People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trojan welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. And it's a great pleasure to introduce you to my guest today, Andrew Ford, a musician and a composer, mostly jazz, but he dabbles in classics, as we'll find out. And you will know him from all our jingles, our little jingles here on Fine Music Radio. And if you were at our gala, you would have heard his rather magnificent overture based loosely on those jingles, the FMR overture with the Cape Town Philharmonic. But first of all, Andrew Ford, welcome to the People of Note studio.
Rodney, hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You must be so used to studios because you spend virtually your whole life in a studio, don't you?
On one side of the screen, yes, either performing or producing stuff from the other side, like here in the studio. But yeah, most of my life so far in the studio.
And you've got a rather magnificent studio, don't you, in Newlands?
I have. I've got the Nut House Recording Studios.
That's
in
right,
Newlands. Yeah, I've been there for 25 years.
Wow.
Producing, well, nearly 30 years, giving my age away. But producing music. I started off there basically doing jingle work for television, writing jingles, and then doing performing in the evening. But that was the majority of the studio work by day.
So what I want to do, Andrew, is to whet everybody's appetite and remind them of that overture. But before we get there, you did this little jingle and you scored it for classical pianos and harpsichords and guitars and woodwind, and also for jazz, for the jazz people, all based on that theme, FMR 101.3. How do these things come to you? Were you sipping coffee and woke up and thought, there we go? Or how did it come to you?
Well, first of all, let me compliment you on your fine vocal skills. And are you auditioning for the next round of jingles?
Actually, there's a thought.
Okay, well, in the industry, we would call that phrase an audio mnemonic. It's a phrase that you associate with a product. And so the idea was to come up with a short but catchy tune that becomes Fine Music Radio's theme tune, audio mnemonic. And the way I came up with it, I just literally sat at the piano, worked my way through a lot of ideas that would be catchy. And the main idea was to come up with a motif that was both able to work in the classical genre and in the jazz genre as well.
Mm-hmm. Which we need here.
Which you need at the station here. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. So we've got quite a few different classical versions. We've got jazz versions. We've got some funk versions. We've got some new ones coming now to the station just to try and keep them fresh. And then, of course, the big daddy of the lot was writing for the symphony orchestra to play the overture, which was based on that theme mm-hmm. for the gala event.
Now, we're going to play that overture imminently.
Right.
But what I want to find out first is, that looked as though it was quite a challenge, and I saw the score, and I listened to it with the score, and you've really used a very large orchestra and a very colourful orchestra. So it must have been fun or extremely difficult, or both.
Both. Absolutely loved it. I do a lot of writing for orchestra and stuff like that for the studio, for movies and things like that. Of course, we were very lucky to be able to use Cape Town Symphony Orchestra, our very own here, based at Otscape. And that is a full symphony orchestra with the full complement of everything, triple winds, all brass strings, you name it.
Percussion,
the full tutti. And so it was lovely to be able to explore all those colors. I mean, when you're listening to the symphony orchestra perform this, I hope that you can hear what I tried to do is take us through various aspects of the orchestra. There's various parts of it that sound like a movie score. There's various kind of tipping our hat to Tchaikovsky in the woodwind section. There's some sections at the end when it becomes very grand and large, like Mussorgsky's The Great Gates of Kiev, the pictures at an exhibition, Movement 10. So it kind of takes you through all of these different things, but all in all, I hope it stands as one nice unified piece.
Well, it did, and you got such a lovely round of applause as well. But at the beginning, it starts very softly, and I want to ask our listeners to listen out very carefully for that theme that I sang so beautifully, because you bring it in very early in the piece, in the woodwind, I think, and then start expanding on it as we go through.
What I did was, when I was orchestrating it, was I started off, I really wanted to start off with the simplicity of the tune.
Yes.
And so it does start with just a solo flute playing the melody on its own by itself in its natural state. And then throughout the remainder of the piece, it gets expanded on, the reharm gets thicker, the instrumentation gets thicker, until eventually it's the full orchestra going at full tilt, brass, everything, very much like a fanfare, like a proud fanfare. So it grows over the 4 minutes and ends up on a moment of pride, hopefully.
Well, of course it did. So let's listen. Here is the FMR Overture. About that. That's our very own FMR Overture, written by my guest, Andrew Ford, the composer and musician, and scored there, as you heard, for a large orchestra, played by the Cape Town Philharmonic and conducted by Bernhard Goehler, and it opened our magnificent gala concert. And congratulations, Andrew. It really is, it's quite sort of goose fleshy stuff, actually, especially if you hear it live. So I hope at home you're listening to it loudly. So, Andrew Ford, I want to find out now more about your, well, I want to say varied career, because I said you dabble in classical music, and as you said, you studied music properly, didn't you? You are a proper musician.
Well, you know, some would disagree, but I did do the classical piano all the way through school. So I did the Royal Schools exams all the way through to grade 8 in school, and I had a fantastic piano teacher. Alan van der Merwe was my Rondebosch Boys piano teacher, music department there. And so I did that all the way to grade 8, but I did have a tough time with English at school. Studying Shakespeare just seemed like an awful lot of work.
And but it is.
It is. Yeah, and I didn't do terribly well at it until my English teacher, Anthony Eaton, if he's still alive, I hope he's listening, saw me at a gig once, and I was playing vibes on the gig. And I remember the horror on my face when I looked into the audience and saw my school English teacher. I think in standard 7. I'm not supposed to be out doing gigs at standard 7. Looked into the white of the eyes of my English teacher, and we kind of shared a look. And I thought, oh, this is going to come back tomorrow at school to haunt me. There's going to be detention or some kind of horrendous repercussions of this. And so I played the rest of the gig on vibes, and I played a bit of piano. And I thought, well, c'est la vie, let's see what happens tomorrow. And to my great pleasure, Anthony arrived the next day at school and called me aside. And I thought, well, here we go. And straight after the function that night, he'd gone straight home, found his record of Oscar Peterson. It's an album called Very Tall with Oscar Peterson and Milt Jackson, my two favorite musicians at the time. And he'd gone and dubbed it off into cassette for me to listen to. And he quietly gave it to me in the class. And there was an unspoken agreement that if you try harder at your English, I'll give you some more nice of my jazz collection.
That's a lovely story.
And it's one of my favorite albums, Very Tall, Oscar Peterson with Milt Jackson. I've brought a track along today called John Brown's Body, which was the first one I heard that when I got home from school that day. And there was no turning back after I listened to that album.
So when you were playing at this gig that you weren't supposed to be at, you weren't playing Oscar Peterson, you were playing something else.
I was playing other stuff, but my first love was that swing piano playing. Mm-hmm. Oscar Peterson always had like Ray Brown with him. We used to have very Cape Town's very finest Basil Moses, who was the closest we could get to Ray Brown. So I had a great time playing with Basil over the years because I was like finding Ray Brown on Cape Town. But I was playing other stuff at the gig, but I think Mr. Eaton could tell that he could hear Oscar Peterson in there somewhere.
Good grief. Was that your first taste of Oscar Peterson, or had you heard him before?
I think I'd heard him before because my mum and dad both love jazz. They grew up on Ella Fitzgerald, Count Basie, Glenn Miller, Frank Sinatra, Sarah Vaughan, all of those
all
great jazz
greats.
And so I'd kind of grown up listening to that style of music, and a lot of that stuff is swing-based.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also Errol Garner and people like that. So I'd grown up with that influence in my upbringing. So it was obviously coming out during that gig, and old Anthony Eaton spotted
it. He picked it up, yes.
And,
but what a lovely thing to do, to make a cassette and give it to you the next day.
Absolutely cracking. I loved it. And I thank him so much for it because it was a life-changing moment where we had an understanding with I'll do the English stuff, you do the music stuff, and let's see if we can get through this stuff.
And how did your English improve with Shakespeare?
It got much better after that. We had a mutual understanding, and everything came together after that.
Excellent. Well, I think since your next piece is Oscar Peterson, and since we're talking about him, shall we listen to the track you're telling me about?
I'd love to.
What's it called?
John Brown's Body, off the Very Tall album by Oscar Peterson and Milt Jackson. Thank you.
Oscar Peterson, and that was called John Brown's Body. Is that right, Andrew?
Indeed. Indeed.
A great inspiration, Oscar Peterson, to my guest, Andrew Ford, the musician and composer, whom we know so well here at Fine Music Radio for his jingles and his FMR overture, which you heard earlier on. But I want to continue now. You mentioned your parents. So that is where your love of music came from, and particularly jazz.
My mum and dad are both pretty good musicians themselves. My dad plays trumpet and piano, and he played for many years in the Johnny Cooper Orchestra. Cape Town-based orchestra, which was a tribute to Glenn Miller.
Mm-hmm.
My dad played for many years. He's still alive, and he still plays occasionally. My mum is also a musician, plays guitar and piano. So between the two of them, I grew up with a fair amount of music in the family. My sister also plays trumpet and guitar.
Oh,
so
my.
It's a real... We used to have family jam sessions in the evening. And we grew up listening to music all the time, really.
And you obviously had started learning the piano very young.
I started at the age of about 7. I had a fantastic jazz piano teacher in England who lived on a little island in the middle of the River Thames. And I used to go there on Saturday mornings for jazz piano lessons. And he had the most fantastic way of teaching me. He was, if I was battling with my scales, he'd say, do you want to be able to play like this? And then he'd play a fantastic blues lick, just like I'd heard on all the recordings, and I'd say, I would love to play that. And he said, well, you can't play that until you can play the F major scale, because that's F major scale based. So I'd say, well, let's bring on that F major scale. Let's crack this then. And then for the following week, I'd practice the F major scale. And then at the end of the week, he'd show me that phrase. And there was another one like check, check. And, we had a great thing. He just knew exactly how to get me to practice my scales. With a reward-based
yes,
reward
which is important
approach.
For a young man, I should
yeah,
think.
Because I think so many students and beginners, they're turned off by that very first stage of learning musical instruments. It's a very hard stage because it's got such a long run-up time.
Mm-hmm.
You sound bad for ages.
Yes,
you know what I mean? On most instruments.
And just playing scaled and arpeggios endlessly.
And even with the best intentions of the heart, there's only a certain amount of time you get under your belt with the instrument, and then it starts to sound nice. And if you can't get to that part fairly quickly, it's a daunting task. You just sound dreadful all day with everybody shouting, shut up! You know what I mean?
But Andrew, you started the right way because it sounds as though right from the beginning you were learning theory, you were learning to read music, you learned about harmony, counterpoint, all that stuff, the real meat and bones of music.
Absolutely. That's one of the reasons why I was able to go on to university and study part classical and jazz. And we did an interesting talk. I think you were there with François de Toye.
At De Hoop, yes.
At De Hoop.
And also you repeated it at Hermanus.
That's correct. And one of the beauties of that is he is such a virtuoso classical musician that it's fascinating to listen to him talk about classical music. And we were talking about various things like there's so much modern music that is based on classical music. The two of them, often people don't realize it. But for example, I'll give you a classic example, that song called All By Myself, All By Myself, Don't Want To Be, is basically the second movement of the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto in C minor.
Oh, and, the second piano concerto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's virtually identical, and it's based on that. And so the moment you can see kind of modern themes in classical music, you realize there's quite a big overlap, and that's what that talk is about, about how Bach came to jazz and jazz.
Exactly.
Based on various things,
and right? I think a lot of people were very surprised and fascinated because you demonstrated, François, and you demonstrated how Bach's music was, in a sense, the beginning of jazz. You also demonstrated how some of Beethoven's harmonic writing and some of his piano sonatas has a kind of jazz background, a jazz feel, for a better word.
Well, François did a better demonstration than I did on that because he was able to pull out all of his clever sonatas and symphonies and things and actually demonstrate them by playing the simple themes and then demonstrating how you can build on a motif and a, you know. And he was fantastic, and it's always great to see him play. You know?
So at Stellenbosch, you obviously had to do this sort of classical training, the real music training.
Well, Rodney, I went to university college of music at
UCT.
At UCT.
Yeah.
So I was very, very lucky to get the jazz program, which had just started a year before I got there, with Mike Campbell. And then Andrew Lilly came back from Berkeley. And so I was, I think, in probably the second or third year right after it got going, which was exactly what I needed after I matriculated. I was like a sponge ready to just soak up this music. And yes. It was wonderful because I was doing classical music, classical piano in the mornings, doing four-part harmony and all the contrapuntal stuff, learning about Bach and Mozart and doing those things. And then having these great ensembles, the big band, jazz ensembles, lessons one-on-one with Andrew Lilly. And it was a fabulous time. I loved it.
It sounds like it.
It really was.
And it sounds as though music is, I want to say, sounds that came easily to you. We spoke about what a business it can be because the beginning is so slow. Mm. But clearly the passion that you had for it got you very far, very quickly.
I think that's where the genetics came in. I was just very lucky to be able to have a musical. You know, I've got the same situation with my two children now. I've got two boys, and they have got the same musical talent that I had. And they're just all over it like a rash. I mean, Nicholas is 22 with his own projects. James is just finishing matric now at Rondebosch. And both of them are romping through the theory.
Well, we saw one of them sing at our Gala concert.
You saw James sing, at arts in the theatre. Yeah.
Gosh, so even your family now is awash with music.
Afraid so.
Afraid so. But, and talking about the university, you are still, you don't lecture there or anything, but you are an external examiner, I think you said.
Exactly. Yeah, I go in occasionally to write external reports on people doing final exams and things like that, but I don't teach there full time, no.
Okay.
I'm not a terribly good teacher, Robbie.
You're not.
No. I find that I think teachers are especially, they're like nurses of the hospital world. They're specially gifted people who are really good at doing what they do, and teachers are those people who have got the patience and able to. It's not something I'm terribly good at. I tend to get you haven't done your scales, well, tough. You know what I mean? I fall into that bracket.
Yes.
I decided to steer away from the
teaching. It's interesting how some musicians are very good teachers and others simply can't and won't touch the whole idea.
Yeah, I fall into the second bracket.
Your next piece, Andrew, is interesting because after the instrumental stuff we've been talking about, you have this group called Take Six, which is a vocal close harmony group, isn't it?
100%.
Tell me about why you've chosen them.
Well, it's a funny story because I was actually house-sitting Mike Campbell's house in the summer when I was studying at UCT while he was away on holiday. And I was he doesn't know this yet, but I was rifling through his music collection and I pulled out this cassette which said Take Six on it and I plonked it on and went and lay outside. And it was the first time I'd ever heard this kind of six-part male vocal singing. It's the most beautiful. The harmonies are spectacular. It's not easy. You've got six vocal harmonies right from the top soprano part right down to the guy that they like to, in the liner notes, they call it the guy in the meat locker down at the bottom who sings the bass part spectacularly. And the vocal harmonies are something else, and they're just such a world. This was recorded in 1988, this album, and the moment I heard this I thought, okay, so that's how you do that. And I just remember listening to that whole album for years after that with an eye to that's how you write for vocals.
Have you written for vocals?
I have written for vocals like this. I love this sound. This is Take Six. It's a gospel group in America, which 1988.
And what are we going to hear?
You're going to hear one of their songs called A Quiet Place, I think it's called.
Okay, A Quiet Place.
And it's vocals only and not too long.
Also, when we were discussing this, you said that, and you played me a little bit, some of the harmonies definitely have a jazz feel to them within this choral sound.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things with four-part harmonies, you can sound very choral. The moment you move into six-part harmonies, you've got an extra two voices to add those extra notes, which give it that jazz twang, that spice to it. Mm-hmm. So you've got all of these other options. You can add the ninth in, suspended voicings that go through the whole thing. And you'll hear that in this recording. The voices just seem to, the chords seem to have an extra layer of dimension to them in their thickness and richness.
My trust. to face a new day with love for all mankind.
It is a lovely sound, isn't it? Close harmony singing. And those are all male voices.
Absolutely.
Six of them.
Six.
In fact, they're called Take Six. And a choice of Andrew Ford, my guest, the musician and composer and people of note this week. And I think people will have heard what you were saying, Andrew, about the sort of jazzy sound and feel of some of those harmonies.
Yeah, they're just particularly warm and thick and lush. They're absolutely gorgeous as far as I'm concerned. I'd never heard anything like it until I heard Take Six. And I always remember thinking, that's a spectacular way of writing for vocals.
A lot of people who know me and who know the station and know me from the station know that I don't know anything about jazz and that it's not a favorite genre for me because I'm so immersed in the classical world. But the creative process in the jazz world must be hugely challenging and also rewarding for someone like you, writing all these things. You spend a lot of time looking for new combinations of harmonies, for example.
Absolutely. It's the beautiful thing about jazz, as we discussed at that thing with Francois in Hermanus, is in many ways jazz offers you a canvas. You get a template on which the song is written, like When the Saints Go Marching In, for example, or any song you like Three Blind Mice or something like that. But then you're given the canvas, a blank canvas, to make of it what you want. You have to obviously follow the guidelines of what's there as the structure of the piece so that you can all work together as an ensemble. But at the end of the day, you get to be creative in that space and take liberties and take the song to wherever you are able to take it to with your fellow musicians who will hopefully be there with you and then bring it back around at the end and finish together. So it's very much a spontaneous creative art.
And this is what I don't understand. If you are taking it to places that you and you hope they follow you, how do they follow you? It's obviously an intuitive thing.
It's a very good question. It's one of the things that jazz musicians get to use all the time. We have to practice all the time is using our ears. A lot of the time when you're playing certain phrasing or a solo, you can hear the way where it wants to go. And the hard part is trusting it and going there with the understanding that your fellow musicians can also hear what you're putting out there. And yes, that they're going to also say, okay, I can hear where you're going and I'm going to trust that you know what you're doing and I'm right behind you. I'm going to go there as well.
So it's literally like that, follow the leader.
It's a follow the leader thing. Yeah. And together, then you start making music together. It doesn't always work. The hardest part is often when you don't have people who are, again, not listening to each other and one sets off on one course and the other one sets off at another course and never the twain shall meet. But then you get people like, as I was talking about, fantastic musicians who are used to working in ensembles. Classical musicians get to work together in ensembles a lot, whether it's a chamber ensemble, an orchestra, where they're very much performing together. The conductor is often not beating time for them to stay in time like a one, two. The conductor is often just giving them direction on how to emote the music, how to
shape it, how to speed
and speed up and rise and fall and be empathetic to the actual music piece itself rather than giving a strict one, two, three, four. Whereas the jazz musicians, you actually need to listen to the time, stay in good time and kind of shape the music off each other.
Well, I wonder how you're going to answer this question. Hmm. One of the things that I find difficult with jazz is when there's the tune and you go into the improvisation section.
Yes.
I sort of feel lost. I don't know what's happening. Whereas with classical music in sonata form, you know, you've got the first subject, the second, it's going to be developed, it'll come back. There's the structure, rather a strict structure. Hmm. So with jazz, I always feel completely lost, and it then becomes boring for me, because then, yes, I think, when are they going to stop this and actually get back to the theme? Does that make sense from a non-jazz person?
It makes complete sense. There is still structure in jazz. I mean, we've got, when you're talking about jazz compositions, you've still got what we refer to as the A section or the B section, the bridge or the coda. The A section we would refer to as your first statement, and then you've got the recapitulation again. Whereas in jazz world, we've still got that same structure, and you need to listen through the, when the person's doing their improvisation over it, you should still be able to hear the tune in underneath it, like, yeah, a current, like an ocean current. It's, yes, still underneath.
Like a set of variations in the classical world,
exactly,
where
like a
no
set
matter
of
how complex they may become,
yeah,
you can still hear the basic theme.
You can still hear the structure underneath it, yeah.
And on that subject, Andrew, again referring back to our gala, you played in the second half an arrangement of Summer of the Rainbow, a tune everyone knows well, and then it went all, and you lost me completely. And we have a recording of that, so let's, may we play a bit of that, and then just tell me what to expect.
Well, we can. Let me tell you a little bit about that performance, because the first part of that introduction is actually one of my favorite classical pieces. It's the first section of a Cacciatore piano concerto.
Oh.
Which I played before Somewhere Goes Into the, because it's such a beautiful introduction. And then you'll hear that what I've done is I've played a solo section of the statement of Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And then once I get to the middle section, I bring the rest of the trio in, and then we play the rest of the tune, and then we go into the improvisation. But you should be able to hear Somewhere Over the Rainbow going through it all the way until we come back with the final statement at the end, if you like, in a classical world. The final recapitulation at the end, and then the ending.
Thank you.
We're going to have to fade a little bit there, otherwise we'll run out of time and not be able to hear the words of wisdom from Andrew Ford, my guest. But there he was with his trio playing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, and with all the improvisation, as you heard there. And that was a little lesson for me, Andrew, thanks to the way you introduced it. And so maybe I should try a little more hard, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Do you
give it another bash?
For this trio, do you, this is not, nothing is written down, is it? Your, the others, the double bass player and the drums, are also following you, as you said earlier.
As I said earlier, very much so. We know the tune Somewhere Over the Rainbow. That's our template.
Yes, and, as you said.
In the jazz world, you've got what are called jazz standards, which is a kind of a broadly based set of maybe 200 songs, which you're expected to know as a jazz musician. So you can go anywhere in the world and call those songs and pick up an instrument anywhere, and you should have those 200 songs in common with whoever's around the world, mm-hmm. which is a fantastic set of, it's a, means you can get up and play without having to rehearse, bring lead sheets or music with you. You just call one of these standards and off you go.
But each, in the case of each standard, the improvisatory part of it will be different in every part of the world, but you will know the template and you'll know where to come back to.
That's the beauty of it, right there. That's exactly it.
Have you done any international travel or playing?
I have. I've been to Dubai. I've been to New Orleans. I've been, in fact, we did. I did a lot of touring with a band called Virtual Jazz Reality back in my day with Ian Smith. And yeah, we went. We did quite a lot of jazz concerts around the world.
Mm-hmm. I just want to talk to you about what you're doing now, because so you've been in this business all your life, and you've loved it, and every moment of it. You've got this fancy studio, as I said, in Newlands. So, what basically are you doing? Do you get lots of commissions to do things?
Well, I do a little bit of everything. I'll tell you what. It's one of the things that I committed to many years ago. I did. I told you I started off in the advertising world, of writing jingles and movie music. Realizing that I've been on both sides of the recording window, in the performance side of things and the engineering side of things, and how hard it is for local artists to get into the recording environment and get practice at it. It's not something that comes to you naturally. Takes practice, and it's a little bit of a daunting experience going into a recording studio and expecting to get crackerjack performances every time. So what I've done over the years is I've made an effort to, I suppose the word would be, give back to local musicians, in the sense of not charging full studio rates and giving student rates to musicians who need to record projects, demos, and submit things for whatever they need, but to get that in the studio feel and get the hang of what it's like to, when somebody says recording. It's daunting. Singers fall apart, musicians fall apart, we all fall apart at the beginning, and over time you get better and better. It's like any skill, you get better and better at your own consciousness of it. So I do a lot of that in the recording studio now. This next piece we're going to play is actually a piece I recorded with a dear friend of mine called Dan Shout, who is a fantastic saxophonist. In fact, he's one of the saxophonists playing on all the FMR jingles.
Oh, right. Okay.
And he's got a project out called Secret Weapons. And we recorded this, and this has actually got a star-studded lineup, because it's got Dan Shout on sax, Justin Belairs, Mark Lecoq, three of Cape Town's top saxophonists, Benjamin Jafter, who is a legend in his own time, Kevin Gibson on drums, a stalwart of the South African industry, and a fantastic guitarist called Mike Bester. And this is off his album called Secret Weapons. It's called Benny's Farm.
And you recorded this
at my studio with Dan for his album. Thank you.
Dan Shouts and his friends. And what a lineup of friends you said there, Andrew, of leading Cape Town musicians. Yep. Even I know them.
Absolutely. They're all fantastic. And they're all good teachers, excellent players, and fantastic session musicians. And really was a treat to record that whole album by Dan Shout. It's
And did you record it in your studio?
I did indeed. And it sounds fantastic. And it's on YouTube and all the platforms. So you can go to Dan Shout and have a listen to that.
Oh, okay.
And you play it on the station as well.
Do we?
You do.
Not on my program, we don't.
Well, you should.
I should. Andrew, just because we're racing towards the end of the program, there must have been people who influenced you in your youth and in, even now that you hear and influenced you. But in your earlier days,
there were many people who influenced me in my misspent youth,
yes,
which was I spent a lot of it in the clubbing days at the Galaxy. I spent a lot of it at the Galaxy Club out in Rylands with a band called Virtual Jazz Reality and Inside Out, which is Ian Smith and Sammy Weber and, again, Kevin. Frank Paco was on drums, I remember. And we used to play a lot of that fantastic kind of jazz, what Cape Town musicians call Cape Town jazz music. And in that style of music, I used to love bands like Spira Gyra, Mezzo Forte. Of course, there was Bob James, Joe Sample, Dave Weckl, the Brecker Brothers, a whole lot of that style of music, which I absolutely loved at that time, mm-hmm, and still do. And we played a lot of that music. In fact, this next piece is one that I brought along that we used to play every Saturday and Thursday nights at Club Galaxy. And it's called Garden Party.
Wait, I haven't finished with you yet.
Oh, damn it. Sorry.
No,
carry on, Ronnie.
We'll get back to Mezzo Forte. But just your clubbing days.
Yes.
Has the world of pop music ever interested you? I mean, pop music. I'm not sure what I mean by pop music, but...
Pop music, yeah. I love pop music as long as it's good. I mean, I love listening to all of these things, this new Billie Eilish and... the various things which are around at the moment. My two children keep me up to date with everything that's fresh there. Some of it is so well produced. It's fantastic to be going into a new genre of music with such good productions. And they're also great. I don't get a chance to produce a lot of that music in my studio because a lot of that stuff is done overseas. But I certainly enjoy listening to it, yeah.
And the more, I don't know whether to say heavy rock, like heavy metal, that sort of thing, does that have any part in your life?
Not being a guitarist, it's not my forte. Mm-hmm. There are much better studios and much better people at recording rock albums than me. People who have got an absolute love of Fender guitars and the very yes, best of guitars and amps and valve amps and things like that. I think they probably do a better job than I would on that. So that's not really my forte, no.
Is the piano your instrument? You don't play any other instrument?
The piano is my main instrument now. I grew up playing drums and piano together.
Okay.
So I studied at university doing a degree in percussion and piano at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But I got tired of carrying the drum kit around and I decided to stick to keyboards.
But you know, you get some wonderful percussion in classical music.
You do.
A whole range of percussion.
Exactly.
Crashing away in a Shostakovich symphony, or even, as you said earlier, the Great Gate of Kiev.
Yes, but you don't have to load the gear after the gig, Roddy.
That's
the big difference.
I see the
It's in the rain in winter when you've got to carry that stuff out to the car at the car park. That's when you suddenly think, this is not the chosen career for me, you know?
Right. And just as we near the end of the program now, are young people learning and enjoying jazz? Because you do external exams at UCT. Is it looking good?
I'm thrilled with the way it's looking at the moment.
Okay.
I really am. There seems to be a resurgence in jazz music around the world. Resurgence in big band music. You've even got Lady Gaga doing albums with Tony Bennett. You name it. It's coming. You've got Michael Bublé. You've got all of these wonderful artists bringing back those classic Frank Sinatra songs. You've got young artists doing all the Sarah Vaughan stuff. The local talent at the College of Music here is fantastic. That's, of course, headed up by Amanda Tiffin at the moment. And it's fantastic to see, like, this new blood in the jazz world coming through.
It's very encouraging to hear that.
Yeah.
And are there lots of jazz people at UCT, lots of jazz students?
Absolutely. It's going like a Boeing. It's great.
Going like a Boeing.
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to go like a Boeing now because I'm going to have to ask you to end of. And now tell me what we're going to hear, mezzo forte.
Well, this is one of the songs that I used to play at the Galaxy.
Oh, you said you used to play it first or every night or something.
Well, I used to play. I played at the Galaxy nearly every Saturday and Thursday for 2.5 years with the band. It's a great Cape Town classic. Everybody loves this song, and it's a song by mezzo forte called Garden Party.
Thank you very much, Andrew Ford, for
Thank
being
you, Roddy.
Very interesting and making me not feel as though I knew nothing about jazz. And thank you as well for all you've done for us with your jingles and that magnificent overture.
Yeah, it's a pleasure.
Andrew Ford, the musician and composer, my guest. And now here's mezzo forte. People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.